The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is Billboard's deputy editor, digital, Katie Atkinson. Greetings, Katie.
Hello, Keith.
How are you?
Great. How about yourself?
I am wonderful, because you're here.
Oh, and?
Also, and because the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news about how Lorde earns her first number one on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. And she marks the third straight woman to lead the list in as many weeks, which perhaps surprisingly isn't exactly a common feat. We'll tell you all about this in just a little bit. And keeping the girl power vibe going, we've got two interviews on today's show with a pair of rising singer-songwriters, both of whom happen to be women, Ruth B. and Ali X. Ruth B. broke through a little over a year ago with her viral hit turned chart smash, Lost Boy, and now she's back with her debut full-length album, Safe Haven. Meanwhile, pop shoppers are probably already familiar with Ali X, as she co-wrote half of Troye Sivan's debut full-length set, Blue Neighborhood. Now she's got her own brand new album, Collection 2, which is garnering rave reviews. So stay tuned for our chats with both ladies in just a little bit.
But before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at Keith_Caulfield or at KT Atkinson. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts.
Alrighty, let's run the Billboard chart numbers into the chart chat. Chart chat, chart chat, chart chat.
Not a real song.
No, not a real song. Keep moving. Well, all hail our Lorde. Yes, Lorde puns. The singer-songwriter earns her first number one on the Billboard 200 Albums chart as her second full-length studio effort, Melodrama, arrives atop the list. It follows her debut album, Pure Heroine, which peaked at number three back in 2013 and spent more than 100 weeks on the chart. The new album was led by the single Green Light, which hit the top 20 of the Billboard Hot 100 back in March. And her first album, on the other hand, spawned the inescapable number one hit Royals, which ruled the Hot 100 for 9 weeks. So even though Lorde has yet to find a certified smash single from the new album, the set is still off to a sturdy start.
Indeed.
Katie, did you know that with Lorde topping the chart, we've had three women in a row hit number one?
Yes, I can believe it. I believe that it went Halsey, and then Katy Perry, and now Lorde.
That's right. That's right. And you know, this leads me to talk about the chart stat of the week.
Oh.
As Katie just said, Lorde follows Katy Perry's Witness, which itself bumped Halsey's Hopeless Fountain Kingdom from number one. So the last time we actually had three albums in a row at number one by women was in late 2012.
Wow.
When Rihanna's Unapologetic
She's not apologetic. Yeah. She's unapologetic.
I wrote apologetic. I'm like, there is no way Rihanna's apologetic.
Rihanna's like, sorry, guys. Sorry for this album.
Yeah, she is not recording any song called Sorry. When Rihanna's unapologetic debuted at number one on the December 8th, 2012 dated chart, followed by, in the next week, Alicia Keys' Girl on Fire, which debuted at number one. And then a week later, Taylor Swift's Red returned to number one for its fourth non-consecutive week at number one. So, this might make you wonder, well, when was the last time that we had three albums by women in a row at number one that were not, like, returning to number one? Because that Taylor Swift thing is kind of, like,
squishy. Technicality.
So, that was actually back in 2009 when that September... Reba McEntire.
Friend of the podcast. Oh, wait, we didn't have her on.
Nope.
I just talked to her last year.
Katie.
She, just a friend of Katie.
She very lovely lady. How did she start the conversation?
Katie, it's so beautiful here in Nashville. The leaves are falling.
It's just like, she's
definitely an autumn interview.
Yeah, it was a very autumnal interview. But evidently, she's like an incredibly lovely, warm, nice lady.
Of course.
Anyway, so Reba, as we just call her, Reba. Her album, Keep On Loving You, debuted at number one on the September 5th dated chart back in 2009. The next week, Colby Calais' Breakthrough debuted at number one. And then the week after that, Whitney Houston's I Look To You debuted at number one. So the last time that we had three albums in a row by women go to number one for the first time.
8 years ago.
Well, oh, yeah, I guess you...
8 years ago.
Yeah, it was September 2009, 10, 11, 12,
almost
one, two,
8 years ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, 8 years ago, three months. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That is crazy. And that was your chart stat of the week.
Well, now it's time for our first interview in this Girl Powered edition of the podcast. 21-year-old Ruth B. recently stopped by the office to talk about her new album, Safe Haven, how her life has changed since her breakthrough hit Lost Boy last year, her songwriting process, why it was important for her to completely write her new album on her own, and how she's already thinking about her next album.
Which is hilarious. She's like, come on, next album. I'm like, girl.
Take a break.
Come on now.
So here's our interview with Ruth B. You better treat me like a damn princess. Make that an
empress, cause I'm so done. Well, welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast, Ruth B. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I am just swell. Thank you for coming in. You must be very, very busy right now because you just released your debut full-length album.
Yeah.
Oh, Safe Haven.
Yes, I know. It's been crazy. Finally, it's out. I've been living with it for a couple years now, so I'm excited to have it out and let people have it.
You know, it was only a year ago. I just checked this. It was a year ago in May when Lost Boy hit the top 40 of the Billboard Hot 100 chart. And since then, or in total, it has actually accumulated like 200 million on-demand streams in the U.S.
Whoa.
So 200 million times this song and video has been played. What has been the biggest change in your life since the success of Lost Boy?
Wow. I mean, I think, yeah, Lost Boy, just that song has changed my life the most. I guess the most different is now that, I mean, I do music all the time. I get to write songs for...
It's a nice change.
Yeah, it's like the best. It's no longer just my little hobby in my room. It's something that I get to take out into the world and create. So that's been like the best part for sure.
I want to say you're 21, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. And when did you first start writing Lost Boy? Because it started on, it was like a Vine thing, and then it sort of grew onto YouTube, and then became this hit. But it started off as just 6 seconds of you. How old were you when that started to happen?
I think when I initially posted the first Lost Boy Vine, I was 19. Yes, I was 19, and I was kind of just hanging out in my room, my piano room, just playing random chords. And I'm a Lost Boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan, kind of just blurped out of me, and that was kind of the beginning of the
just
song.
Just blurped out.
Yeah.
It's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Did you ever expect, I mean, I know I'm sure everyone has asked you this question, but did you ever expect that, you know, Lost Boy, just that sort of inspiration would turn into, you know, a major label album? You know, was that the dream goal to, like, get signed to a label and put out an album? Was that always in your mind?
No, it wasn't. Mostly because I didn't even know that that's what you were... Like, I didn't even know what a label really was before any of this. Like, I just knew that I liked music and I wanted to do it with the rest of my life. But when I was posting Vines, it was more just for fun. Like, I never thought that this is going to lead to anything big because it was just these 6-second videos. So even when I started gaining followers, like, I remember being like, this can't be real. This is why for 6 seconds. But it was just fun, and it was like a little thing I could do after school, and it helped me kind of learn how to create these lines that would eventually turn into songs.
How many instruments do you play? Because you play piano. Do you play anything else?
No, I did play flute at one point, but not anymore.
can you if someone gave you a flute and said you have to play, would you be able to do anything with it?
I think I would. Maybe like a Hot Cross Buns.
Right.
A really good rendition. Yeah.
I think I could play the recorder still.
Yes.
If someone really forced
wow.
me to.
Yeah, me too.
That's about
throwing
as,
it back.
That's about as adept as I get in terms of instruments. Yeah. Well, Safe Haven was released on May 5th.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel now that the album has been sort of released into the wild and people can hear it? How do you feel now that it's out there and people can listen to it?
It's very relieving. I felt like this like burden had been kind of lifted off my shoulders because I've been living with these songs for a while, and I really always wanted people to know that there was more to me than just Lost Boy. So just the fact that that's out there now, and if someone wants to listen, they can, means a lot to me, and I'm excited. I'm really loving the response, and I'm just excited that people are kind of connecting with the songs. That's all that really matters.
The new album was completely written by yourself,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like Lost Boy was.
Yeah.
That's fairly unusual by today's, you know, pop standards for an artist to solely write an album on their own. Was that something that you were particularly focused on and keen on doing, like making sure that it was your baby and that it was all you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of thought that's the way it always was. And so it was surprising for me to even learn that that's not the way it is. And so it was just something that I thought was important for me to write. And I just wanted to be very proud of this whole thing. And I knew that the only way that was going to happen for me was if these were all my stories and if I meant everything that I sang. So it was important. And I'm really glad with the way it all turned out.
So far in this conversation, I've learned that you didn't really know what a label was.
Yeah.
And you didn't really know that it was sort of normal that people would collaborate with other people to write music.
Yeah.
So when you were younger and you had some of your own favorite artists, did you like look at the liner notes to see anything about them, or was that like...
No. Well, I used to watch a lot of interviews like on YouTube.
Right.
On YouTube, I would like Google or whatever, read interviews, but I never checked like who wrote it. Just never. I just always assumed like if you're singing it, that you wrote this.
You would be mighty surprised.
I know. I guess I was kind of naive, but I don't know. It's fine. Like if you sing it and you convey it, that's great.
Right.
But for me, I know that like I'm not very good at. It's just, like writing for me is like writing in a diary. So I couldn't imagine sitting with someone and being like, okay, like this and that. Like,
here's what I'm thinking. Let's
yeah,
write something together.
It's very intimate. So it was just important that I was as honest as I could be. And I knew that was the only going to happen if I did it myself.
It's interesting because, you know, someone like Adele, you know, who writes from the heart is very
yeah.
personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she writes probably most of her lyrics, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think she probably needs some guidance and assistance with, you know, the music portion,
yeah.
like the melodies and that's thing.
Yeah.
What's great about you is that you kept it all self-contained. I mean, you do have producers working with you on
yeah.
the album, obviously.
Yeah.
But also what's amazing is that you get all the publishing and you keep all that money. Since I'm just saying,
hey, yeah.
hey, that's a nice perk on the side.
Sure.
How many songs did you end up writing before you ended up with the final 12? Are you the type of artist that, you know, you've got like pages and pages of like songs and songs, or is it like, nope, we've got these dozen songs and this is how I feel?
Yeah, I think by that time, so I had been writing for about a year and a half. Like, the first song I wrote was Lost Boy. So in that year, I think I had written like 20, 21 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I wanted it to be 12. So it was more just about picking between those 20. And it wasn't as hard, just because I felt like these 12 together made the best like end story together.
Why was 12 the number you were fixing on? Someone told you it had to be 12 songs for an album?
No. It was, I don't know. Like, I don't like the number 13, so I knew I didn't want it to be 13.
Right.
And I knew I didn't want it to be 10. So it was 11 or 12, and I like 2, so 12 made sense.
It's funny how things like this, like, sometimes it's just, like, a superstition, or
yeah.
there's not really a great reason.
Yeah.
You could have said, well, I'm really into numerology. and 12, right? It's a cosmic number or something weird. I don't know. What is the songwriting process for you like? Is it just, you know, you doodling in your diary and then you try to find a piano bit that goes with it? Or
yeah, it's definitely changed. When I first started, it was just like lyric, melody, right there together, and there was no, and I had to be at the keyboard. But now it's kind of diverse. Like, I write just about anywhere. I could be on a plane or in my room, a hotel, wherever. And it's more just about the lyrics first now for me, and then kind of seeing what melody comes with it. But it's always about just being honest, and like, if I'm feeling it right there, like putting it in a paper, even if it doesn't sound like, I'm trying to get away from rhyming. I feel like that's always been a huge part of my writing. Like, I need to make sure everything rhymes, but now I'm trying to be like, okay, just if it makes sense, it makes sense. It doesn't have to rhyme right away.
Then at some later point, do you try to make it rhyme, or do you just like, no, if it works, it works, and it doesn't have to?
They come in rhymes, and now I want to, because a lot of the music I listen to doesn't rhyme, and I love it, and some of the stuff I do, it does rhyme, and I love it also, and it's funner for me when it rhymes, because it's like a puzzle, and I have to actually sometimes think about it, but sometimes it might hinder me from just saying what I want to say, because it's like, no, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of, for album two, I really want to like have most of it.
Maybe. Album two.
Yeah, I'm already thinking like that. I'm crazy, but have a lot of music that doesn't rhyme as much.
I'm sure your label's just like, we just put out that first album. Let's focus on this one. Is there anyone that you would like to work with? I mean, though you write everything on your own, are there like, do you have like favorite artists or people that you would love to try to work with or collaborate with in some fashion, be it on stage in a performance or, you know, in a studio?
I always say I love Stevie Wonder, so that would be, just to even watch him kind of do his thing would be amazing. So yeah, that's like a huge dream.
I'm like, just to be in the same room with Stevie Wonder, frankly.
Seriously, honestly, like just watch him play a little bit, like that'd be so cool.
Do you have like a lot of his music? When you were younger, did you get educated about his music?
Yeah, when they immigrated from Ethiopia to Edmonton, that's when they kind of started listening to a lot of music. So when my brother and I heard music, it was either Stevie Wonder or like Michael Jackson, and like that kind of stuff. So I always loved his music, and I really appreciated his piano playing. That's when I started playing piano lessons. Like, I would watch his videos all the time and just be fascinated, and I always wanted to like move as quickly as him. So yeah,
you had solid upbringing with Michael and Stevie.
Yeah. The best, the kings.
Well, this has been lovely.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming in, and make sure to check out Ruth B's new album Safe Haven, which is out now. Go check it out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan, and when we're bored we play in the woods, always on the run.
Thank you again to the lovely Ruth B for making the time to drop by and chat with us.
She was lovely, by the way, and she's so young, and I'm still sort of flabbergasted that she wrote the entire new album totally on her own.
Kids these days.
I mean, and also in that interview, as you just heard, she's like, she didn't realize like that people wrote songs with other people. She just assumed that you just wrote them on your own.
Well, back in the day, a lot of people did do that.
She didn't even know like what labels were like a few years ago.
Oh man.
Like she's like, I guess I'm sort of naive. I'm like, girl, I guess you are.
But she's still doing it.
As I joked, I'm like, yeah, but you get all that publishing for all those songs on your own.
Exactly.
Well, next up, we've got an interview with Allie X. Pop Shop listeners might already be familiar with her work without even necessarily knowing it, as she co-wrote half of Troye Sivan's first full-length album, Blue Neighborhood, including the top 40 charting Hot 100 hit, Youth. Allie X recently released her new album, Collection 2, which also happens to feature a co-write from Sivan. So it's also getting great notices from the likes of Time and Slant. And anyway, it's just a really good album.
Yeah.
You should definitely check it out.
Good word of mouth.
And everyone on my Twitter timeline, as I told Allie, is just loving it. Allie recently came by our New York office and did a Facebook Live performance. And while she was there, we thought we'd grab her for the Pop Shop. So we connected with her through the magic of technology, a.k.a. a phone, and chatted with her about the new album, writing music, how she got together with Sivan, and much more. So here's our interview with Allie X. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. Allie X, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I am spiffy. I've actually been listening to your album for a little bit now. Actually, friends of mine on Twitter for like the past few weeks have been like going on and on about you. And I'm just like...
Which friends?
Very good, important friends. Well, like people that I trust about music. And I'm
some
like
pop gurus,
basically. Yeah, and I'm like, okay,
that's good news.
I've been missing the boat, and I got on the AliEx train, and I'm like, yes, I have missed the boat, and also like a lot of like publications like Time and Slant and a lot of like you know blogs have been just like really, really excited about the album. What has it been like hearing from folks and, you know, critics, I suppose, but what has it been like getting the feedback about the album? It must be pretty gratifying, I would imagine.
Yeah, it has been very gratifying. It took a very long time to put the album together, and there's so much sort of guesswork involved and sort of stumbling through the dark, you know, until you find something. And then all you can really trust is yourself. You have like, you know, label people and executives and whatever giving you their opinion. But ultimately, it all comes kind of down to you to make that final decision, or at least in my case. So, yeah, it's nerve wracking putting it out. And I've been very happy with the response, especially from the fans. That's really what matters the most. And they all seem to really love it and to be kind of lost in it and brought into the X world. So it's great.
You said something about like stumbling through the dark, and it's funny. I was actually going to specifically ask you about something that kind of references what you just said, because I was scrolling through your Twitter feed, as one does when they're preparing for interviews, and you were talking about someone was asking you about the writing process for you, and you said where you described writing as, quote, scrambling through the dark, like in a joking way. Is that what songwriting is like for you? Because you kind of described it as like, you know, it comes in bits and pieces. It's not necessarily like a very sort of structured thing necessarily.
Yeah, it's funny because I live in a place where songwriting is as structured as can be. As you probably know, Los Angeles is, I don't mean to keep saying this in a demeaning way because I've said this in a bunch of interviews, but it's a machine. It's a pop writing machine. And usually it's all organized. You're put in a room at a certain time with certain writers and producers, and you're supposed to leave with a song at the end of the day. And so, you know, ever since I've been in LA, I've become kind of accustomed to that. But where I started with writing was quite the opposite. It is, if I'm left by myself, yeah, I'll spend months, years, writing and finishing production on a song until I get it right. And I think with this album, I got kind of confused by my new environment. And I thought that I would be writing the album in the way that I write songs just in general to pitch to other artists. And you know, it wasn't until I stepped away that I realized that doesn't work for me as an artist. I still need to do it in my very sort of, stumbling through the dark kind of way.
And
that's how I got, you know, I think some of the best songs on the album.
I was going to say it must have been like really freeing for you to kind of have that revelation and be like, you know what, actually, this isn't the way it's supposed to work for me, for my own project.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
On the album, there's a song that I really, really like a lot, and it's called Casanova.
Oh, thanks.
It has like this like plucky little like kind of like disco beat, and your vocals on the chorus. I guess this may be technically like the pre-chorus, I suppose, where you kind of hit those really like high notes. It's just a really, really cool song. Can you talk about where this song came from and how you wrote it, and just tell me everything about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a song that I actually wrote in an LA session with a writer. His name's Coffee. He's part of the Monsters and Strangers. I don't know if you know them, but we had just a loop going. Just the dun 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 dun. We added the swing later. And yeah, it happened really quick, that idea. And I have to give Coffee credit for the Casanova fuck me over thing. That was a stroke of genius. And I was just like, yes. I remember like we were just sort of like, we're really into it and just really vibing. And I think the whole song was written in about an hour.
Wow.
I have sort of an image of like the whole time we were writing it, I had an image of like someone, I'd say a girl. Yeah. A girl in like a long dress on the edge of a cliff, like in the middle of the night with sort of glowing blue dice or some sort of like rock in her hand. And that's still kind of like what I think of when I talk about the song.
That, funny, when you say that, it reminds me of, for some reason, this reference may be lost on you, but the Eurythmics, Here Comes the Rain Again video where Annie Lennox is like on a cliff, like somewhere in England, and she's in a nightgown and it's in the middle of the night and she's holding like a lantern and she's walking through the dark singing Here Comes the Rain Again, and it's very cinematic. And that a lot of the songs on your album have this kind of like sort of soundscape quality to it, you know, where it's kind of sounds like it's just, you feel like you're in kind of a place when you hear the music. You kind of feel transported in a way. Does that kind of roll through your head when you hear the songs now? Do you feel like you're kind of taken to another place?
Okay, few different answers here. First of all,
sorry.
I'm such an Annie Lennox fan. I've never seen that video, but I love that song. Number two, what you just said was like, that's like the highest compliment that you could pay me, that you get pulled into that sort of world, because that is my intention and that is the way that I go about making the work. So thank you. And what was the last part? Did you say, was that my intention?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you hear the music, when you hear these songs, you feel like you kind of feel like you're transported. You feel like you're in a different place. You know, was that, I'm assuming that was the intention, to kind of feel like you've been taken somewhere else. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. And that is what being an artist does for me. And I think that creativity and art is the greatest escape we have from all the chaos and confusion of the world. And so that is sort of, you know, what it means to me, and hopefully what it does for the people that listen to the work that I make.
There's a lot of on the album, it's like very varied, very varied. Wow.
Very varied.
Very varied. it is incredibly varied. There we go. Because, you know, you'll have like a contemplative moment, and then you'll have like sort of a dancey, upbeat moment. Were you consciously thinking of that to kind of like find the right balance and the flow? Because it's a tight album. It's 10 tracks, and, you know, it's like all killer, no filler. Like, were you kind of thinking of that as you were putting the album together? That kind of
all killer, no filler.
Well, you know
that.
What I mean. You know what I mean.
Well, I mean, again, thank you for that compliment. That means a great deal. This was, I mean, I've written probably 50 songs, demos that I was considering for this album at one time or another. When I was on a flight to Denmark to a writing camp in,
as one does,
late September. As one does. Well, actually, as one does. Yeah. When you're a writer.
Wait, for you, yes. For me, not so much. But yeah.
But anyway, I was on this long ass flight to Denmark and like stopped in, I think, Iceland. And I was like, OK, on this flight, I am going to decide the track listing for this album, because I have an iTunes folder full of songs, and I need to, like, just even just for my own head to get this straight, I'm going to narrow it down. And I narrowed it down to 15 songs on that flight, you know. And then I came back and I set about finishing the production with this guy Jordan Palmer. And from there, yeah, you know, there were songs where we couldn't crack the production, and there were songs that I started to realize weren't fitting the overall vibe. And from there, it kind of just, we attempted to finish ones, and then when we'd given it a really good attempt and it wasn't working, I sort of was like, okay, let's cut the fat, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up at the 10.
Wow.
I also feel like as a smaller artist, like I never do encores. I don't want to give people so much that they get bored. You know, I want it to be concise and strong execution with everything I do.
It's funny, like I've been around long enough to hear, you know, back you hear it. Sorry, let me step that back a little bit. In the olden days, when people would have to restrict their album to just a piece of vinyl, you know, they only had like, what was it, like 36 minutes or something, or 38 minutes at the most.
Right, right.
You know, so it's like you had like, when you listen to Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, it's like it's every single track is like perfect. And you have to make those decisions. And now it's like we have this luxury of having like unlimited amounts of time. It's like, oh, man, sometimes you just quality control. Kids, come on.
Totally.
So
Shorter attention spans.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, it's like, I mean, but you know, you have to, it's that struggle of like, you want to give the fans and, you know, you want to give as much of your work out there as possible, but at the same time, you want to find the right balance. So anyway, that was a slight, you know, I went off the rails there, but I want to ask one.
No, it's an interesting conversation.
Yes, but I want to keep it focused. Back to the album. I noticed that Troye Sivan co-wrote a song on your album. Troye Sivan, who's a friend of the podcast, who's been on the show a couple times.
Cute.
He wrote a song called Vintage. And you also actually, for people listening, Ali wrote like half of Troy's last album. How did you get connected with Troy? Was it like one of those things where you described earlier where it was literally like you set up in a room with Troye Sivan, like, here, write a song?
No, and I feel like if that had happened, we might have not had such a fruitful artistic relationship.
Yeah.
It was actually a combination of Twitter DM.
Wow.
And Leland, who you're probably aware of him, Brett McLaughlin.
I am. Yes.
Yeah, he's like superstar writer now. He wrote a ton on my album, and we've written a lot for Troy and other artists. And yeah, he has like Selena Gomez's next single, I think. Anyway, Troy was already friends with Brett. And so I think like it was a combination of Troy and I saying we should work together on Twitter, and then Brett sort of making it happen. And we also work with this producer named Bram. And it was sort of just one of those things where like it was the synergy of the four of us in a room together, and there was no sort of there was no feeling of like we got to write a single for this kid, you
we
know.
Need
it
a
was
hit.
More like Troy, like exactly.
Some guy
yeah.
with a cigar and comes think, in and says, "There's money rolling right in on this or something."
Exactly, and I feel like others that worked with Troy, I don't know if this actually happened, but I feel like the attitude was probably more like he's this new guy, he's got a huge YouTube following, let's write him a single, you know. And that's not how Troy likes to work.
Right,
he's very creatively involved. He doesn't care about being on the radio. He just has a lot that he wants to say, and that's how we approached the songs, you know, and that's I think why the album turned out so special.
Well, I mean, and you can actually hear like when you listen to like if you're a fan, like for folks listening, if you're a fan of Troye Sivan and Blue Neighborhood, you know, you'll really appreciate Ali's album as well because it has that kind of like intimate quality. But it's like still very cool and interesting, and like the sounds that you hear throughout the album are just, they constantly sort of surprise you. So, I mean, they're both great listens.
Thank you so much.
So go listen to both albums. Go listen to Ali. Go see her. Eventually, you're going on tour at some point down the road, right? You haven't announced dates, but they're coming, I think. Is that what you've said recently?
Yeah, that's pretty much true.
You're like, we have to be very oblique about that.
Yeah, I don't want to raise expectations or anything until it's confirmed.
Absolutely. Well, this has been lovely. Thank you so much for doing this. And I wish you nothing but continued success in the future.
Oh, thank you so very much.
Thank you again, Ali X, for taking the time to speak with us. Make sure to check out her new album, Collection 2, and especially the song Casanova. It is so, so good. I believe, Katie, we have reached that time.
Oh, man.
I know. It is the time of the season for ending the podcast.
Do you feel like in honor of our guests today that we should go by Keith C. and Katie A.?
Sure. It was funny, like that totally just like worked out that we had like two ladies
with single initial last names.
Yeah. That I wasn't planning that.
No,
it just sort of worked out that way.
Yeah. So thanks for that, ladies.
Well, KDA, what song should we go out on? Something that's very sort of female empowerment themed, like Helen Reddy's I Am Woman.
Oh, man. I
Taking
mean,
it too far back there.
No, I think that you did it. Let's just do it.
Okay. See you guys next time.
All right. Bye.
I am woman. Hear me roar in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.